The Hobbit, Part 1, by J.R.R. Tolkien.
In a hole in the ground there lived a hobbit. Not a nasty, dirty, wet hole filled with ends of worms and an oozy smell, nor yet a dry, bare, sandy hole with nothing in it to sit down on or to eat. It was a hobbit hole, and that means comfort. It had a perfectly round door like a porthole, painted green, with a shiny yellow brass knob in the exact middle. The door opened onto a tube-shaped hall like a tunnel, a very comfortable tunnel without smoke, with paneled walls and floors tiled and carpeted, provided with polished chairs and lots of pegs for hats and coats. The hobbit was fond of visitors. He was a very well-to-do hobbit, and his name was Baggins, Bilbo Baggins. He was about 50 years old or so, and had lived in the beautiful hobbit hole in what was called Bag End for many years, and had, in fact, apparently settled down immovably. By some curious chance, one morning long ago in the quiet of the world, when there was less noise and more green, and the hobbits were still numerous and prosperous, Bilbo Baggins was standing at his door after breakfast, smoking an enormous, long wooden pipe that reached nearly down to his woolly toes, when an old man with a staff came by. He had a tall, pointed blue hat, a long gray cloak, a silver scarf over which a white beard hung down below his waist, and immense black boots.
Good morning.
What do you mean? Do you wish me a good morning, or that it is a good morning, whether I want it or not, or that you feel good this morning, or that it is a morning to be good on?
All of them at once, and a very fine morning for a pipe of tobacco out of doors into the bargain. If you have a pipe about you, sit down and have a fill of my pipeweed. There's no hurry. We have all day before us to blow gray rings of smoke.
Very pretty. But I've no time to blow smoke rings this morning. I'm looking for someone to share in an adventure that I'm arranging, and it's very difficult to find anyone.
I should think so in these parts. We're plain, quiet folk and have no use for adventures. Nasty, disturbing, uncomfortable things make you late for dinner. I can't think what anybody sees in them. We don't want any adventures here, thank you. Good morning.
What a lot of things you use good morning for. Now you mean that you want to get rid of me, and that it won't be a good morning till I move off.
Not at all, not at all, my dear sir. Let me see. I don't think I know your name.
I know your name, Mr. Bilbo Baggins, and you know my name, though you don't remember that I belong to it. I am Gandalf. To think that I should have lived to be good morninged by Belladonna Took's son, as if I was selling buttons at the door.
Gandalf! Gandalf! Good gracious me, not the wandering wizard that used to make such particularly excellent fireworks. I remember those. Not the Gandalf who was responsible for so many quiet lads and lasses going off on mad adventures, anything from climbing trees to visiting elves or sailing ships to other shores. Bless me, I beg your pardon, but I had no idea you were still in business.
Now, where else should I be? Well, I'm pleased to find you remembering something about me. Indeed, for your old grandfather Took's sake and for the sake of poor Belladonna, your mother, I'll give you what you asked for.
I beg your pardon. I haven't asked for anything.
Yes, you have. Twice now. My pardon. I give it to you. In fact, I'll go so far as to send you on this adventure. Very amusing for me, very good for you, and profitable too, very likely, if you ever get over it.
Sorry, I don't want any adventures, thank you. Not today. Good morning. But please come to tea any time you like. Why not tomorrow? Come tomorrow. Goodbye. Oh, what on earth did I ask him to tea for? I think I'd better have a cake or two and something to drink. Ooh, what a fright!
Gandalf, in the meantime, was still standing outside the door and laughing long but quietly. After a while, he stepped up, and with the spike of his staff scratched a queer sign on the hobbit's beautiful green front door. Then he strode away. The next day, Bilbo had almost forgotten about Gandalf. He didn't remember things very well unless he put them down on his engagement tablet like this, Gandalf T. Wednesday. He had been too flustered yesterday to do anything of the kind. Just before tea time, there came a tremendous ring on the front doorbell. And then he remembered. He rushed to put on the kettle and put out another cup and saucer and an extra cake or two and ran to the door.
Oh, I'm sorry to keep you waiting.
Dwalin, at your service.
Bilbo Baggins at yours. I'm just about to take tea. Pray come and have some with me.
Thank you.
Oh, excuse me. So you have got here at last.
I see they have begun to arrive already. That's Dwalin's green hood hanging up. Balin at your service.
Oh, thank you. Come along in and have some tea.
A little beer would suit me better if it's all the same to you, my good sir. But I don't mind some cake. Seed cake, if you have any.
Lots. Oh, my. What did he mean, they have begun to arrive?
That's Gandalf for certain this time. Here's the beer and cake. Excuse me while I answer the door.
What can I do for you, my dwarves?
Keely, at your service.
And Feely?
At yours and your family's.
Dwalin and Balin here already, I see. Let's join the throng.
Throng? I don't like the sound of that. I really must sit down for a minute and collect my wits and have a drink. Somebody at the door.
Some four, I should say, by the sound. Besides, we saw them coming along behind us in the distance, didn't we?
Oh, gracious, gracious me. Oh, what's happening here? Well, it's not four dwarves, after all. It's five.
At your service.
Sorry.
Nori.
Ari.
Owen.
And Glowen.
This is the most awkward Wednesday I can remember.
Now what? Somebody's banging with a stick.
Carefully, carefully. It's not like you, Bilbo, to keep friends waiting on the mat and then open the door like a popgun. Let me introduce Biffa, Bofa, Bomba, and especially Thorin.
At your service.
I'm sorry to have kept you waiting. I didn't mean to open so abruptly.
Now, don't mention it. Now, I see 13 hoods hanging in your hallway, Bilbo. We're all here, quite a merry gathering. I hope there's something left for the latecomers to eat and drink.
There's some tea.
What's that, tea? Oh, no, thank you. A little red wine, I think, for me.
And for me.
And raspberry jam and apple tart.
And mince pies and cheese.
And pork pie and salad.
And more cake.
And ale. And coffee, if you don't mind.
Put on a few eggs, there's a good fellow. And just bring out the cold chicken and pickle.
Seems to know as much about the inside of my larder as I do myself. Confusticate and bebother those dwarves. Why don't they come and lend a hand?
Gandalf sat at the head of the party with the 13 dwarves all round, and Bilbo sat on a stool at the fireside, nibbling at a biscuit. His appetite was quite taken away, trying to look as if this was all perfectly ordinary and not in the least an adventure. The dwarves ate and ate and talked and talked, and time got on.
I suppose you'll all stay to supper?
Of course. And after. We shan't get through the business till later, and we must have some music first.
Bring out the instruments.
Excuse me, I left mine on the porch.
Well, just bring mine in with you.
Far over the misty dragon's eye, more fierce than fire, they blow their towers and houses frail.
The mountains smoke beneath the moon, the dwarves they heard the tramp of doom, they fled their hall to dying fall beneath his feet, beneath the moon.
Far over misty mountains grim, to dungeons deep and caverns dim, we must away ere break of day.
As they sang, the hobbit felt the love of beautiful things made by hands and by cunning and by magic moving through him, a fierce and jealous love, the desire of the hearts of dwarves. Then something tookish woke up inside him, and he wished to go and see the great mountains and explore the caves and wear a sword instead of a walking stick. He looked out of the window. The stars were out in a dark sky above the trees. He thought of the jewels of the dwarves shining in dark caverns. Suddenly, in the wood beyond the water, a flame leapt up, probably somebody lighting a wood fire. And he thought of plundering dragons settling on his quiet hill and kindling at all the flames. He shuddered. And very quickly he was playing Mr. Baggins of Bag End again. He got up trembling. He had less than half a mind to fetch a lamp, and more than half a mind to pretend to and go and hide behind the beer barrels in the cellar and not come out again until all the dwarves had gone away. Suddenly he found that the music and singing had stopped, and they were all looking at him with eyes shining in the dark.
Where are you going?
What about a little light?
We like the dark.
Dark for dark business.
There are many hours before dawn.
Oh, of course.
Now let Thorin speak.
Gandalf, dwarves, and Mr. Baggins, we are met together in the house of our friend and fellow conspirator, this most excellent and audacious hobbit. May the hair on his toes never fall out. All praise to his wine and ale.
What's this fellow conspirator? Audacious hobbit.
We are met to discuss our plans, our ways, means, policy, and devices. We shall soon, before the break of day, start on our long journey, a journey from which some of us, or perhaps all of us, may never return. It is a solemn moment. Our object is, I take it, well known to us all.
I believe he's fainted.
Strike a light, somebody.
Excitable little fellow, gets funny queer fits. But he's one of the best, one of the best, as fierce as a dragon in a pinch.
Will he do you think?
Oh, of course, of course. Why, his ancestor, Bullroarer, charged the ranks of the goblins of Mount Graham in the Battle of the Green Fields and knocked their King Golfimble's head clean off with a wooden club. It sailed 100 yards through the air and went down a rabbit hole. And in this way, the battle was won and the game of golf invented at the same moment.
Well, one shriek like that in a moment of excitement would be enough to wake the dragon and all his relatives and kill the lot of us. As soon as I clapped eyes on the little fellow, bobbing and puffing on the mat, I had my doubts. He looks more like a grocer than a burglar.
I think he's coming too.
Burglar?
That's right. Let's have no more argument. I've chosen Mr. Baggins, and that ought to be enough for all of you. You asked me to find the 14th man for your expedition, and I chose Mr. Baggins. You can stop at 13 if you like and have all the bad luck, or go back to digging coal. If I say he's a burglar he is, or will be when the time comes. You can say expert treasure hunter instead of burglar, if you like.
I like that.
Yes, there's a lot more in him than you guess, and a deal more than he has any idea of himself. You may, possibly, all live to thank me yet. Now, Bilbo, fetch the lamp, and let's have a little light on this map. This was made by Thrawr, your grandfather, Thorin. It's a plan of the mountain.
I don't see that this will help us much. I remember the mountain well enough and the lands about it. And I know where Mirkwood is, and the withered heath, where the great dragons breed.
There is a dragon marked in red on the mountain. But it'll be easy enough to find him without that, if ever we arrive there.
There's one point that you haven't noticed, and that's the secret entrance.
Oh. It may have been secret once, but how do I know that it's secret any longer? Old Smaug has lived there long enough now to find out anything there is to know about those caves.
He may, but he can't have used it for years and years.
Why?
Because it's too small. 5 feet high, the door, and 3 may walk abreast, say the runes on the map. But Smaug couldn't creep into a hole that size, not even when he was a young dragon.
That's true.
Certainly not after devouring so many of the dwarves and men of Dale.
It seems a great big hole to me. How could such a large door be kept secret from everybody outside, apart from the dragon?
Oh, in lots of ways. From what it says on the map, I should guess there's a closed door which has been made to look exactly like the side of the mountain. That's the usual dwarves method. I think that's right, isn't it?
Yeah. Quite right.
Yes. Well, also, I forgot to mention that with the map went a key.
Huh?
Yes, a small, curious key.
Oh.
Let me see. Here it is. Oh. Now keep it safe, Thorin.
Indeed I will. Well, now things begin to look more hopeful. Supposing our burglar expert gives us some ideas or suggestions.
First, I should like to know a bit more about things. I mean, about the gold and the dragon and all that, and how it got there, and who it belongs to, and so on and further.
Well, bless me, haven't you got a map? And didn't you hear our song? And haven't we been talking about all this for hours?
All the same, I should like everything plain and clear. I should like to know about risks, out-of-pocket expenses, time required, and remuneration, and so forth.
Oh, he wants to know what he's going to get out of it, and if he'll come back alive.
Very well. Long ago, in my grandfather Thrawr's time, our family was driven out of the far north and came back with all their wealth and their tools to this mountain on the map. They mined, and they tunneled, and they made huge halls and great workshops. And in addition, I believe they found a good deal of gold and a great many jewels, too.
I remember that.
Anyway, they grew immensely rich and famous, and my grandfather was king under the mountain again. His halls became full of armor and jewels and carvings and cups, and the toy market of Dale that was built nearby by mortal men was the wonder of the North. Now, undoubtedly, that was what brought the dragon. Dragons steal gold and jewels, you know, from men and elves and dwarves, wherever they can find them. And they guard their plunder as long as they live, which is practically forever unless they're killed, and never enjoy a brass ring of it. Well, there was a most specially greedy, strong, and wicked worm called Smaug. So one day, he flew up into the air and came south. The first we heard of it was a noise like a hurricane coming from the north, and the pine trees on the mountain creaking and cracking in the wind. Well, from a good way off, we saw the dragon settle on our mountain in a spout of flame. Then he came down the slopes, and when he reached the woods, they all went up in fire. By that time, all the bells were ringing in Dale, and the warriors were arming, and the dwarves rushed out of their great gate. But there was the dragon waiting for them. Not one escaped that way. The river rushed up in steam, and a fog fell on Dale. And in the fog, the dragon came on them and destroyed most of the warriors. Then he went back and crept in through the front gate and routed out all the halls and lanes, tunnels, alleys, cellars, mansions, and passages. After that, there were no dwarves left alive inside. And he took all their wealth for himself.
That was a terrible time.
Probably. For that is the dragon's way. He's piled it all up in a great heap far inside and sleeps on it for a bed. Well, after that we went away. But we've never forgotten our stolen treasure. And we still mean to get it back and to bring our curses home to Smaug. Now we have the map and key to the secret door. We shall succeed in our burglary.
Yes!
Gandalf, I should like to know how you got hold of the map.
I didn't get hold of it. I was given it. Your grandfather, Thror, was killed, you remember, in the mines of Moria by Azog the Goblin.
Curse his name, yes.
Yes, and Thrain, your father, went away on the 21st of April, 100 years ago, last Thursday, and has never been seen by you since.
True, true.
Well, your father gave me this to give to you.
I don't understand.
Well, I found your father a prisoner in the dungeons of the necromancer.
Whatever were you doing there?
Never you mind. I was finding things out as usual. I tried to save your father, but it was too late. He was witless and wandering, and had forgotten almost everything except the map and the key.
We have long ago paid the goblins of Moria. We must now give a thought to the necromancer.
Don't be absurd. He's an enemy quite beyond the powers of all the dwarves put together. The dragon and the mountain are more than big enough tasks for you.
Hear, hear!
Hear what?
Well, I should say that you ought to go to the east and have a look around. After all, there is the side door, and the dragons must sleep sometimes, I suppose. If you sit on the doorstep long enough, I dare say you'll think of something. Now, what about bed and an early start and all that? I'll give you a good breakfast before you go.
Before we go, I suppose you mean... Aren't you the burglar? And isn't sitting on the doorstep your job? And not to speak of getting inside the door. But I agree about bed and breakfast. I like 6 eggs with my ham when starting on a journey. Fried, not poached. And mind you don't break them. I won't eat a broken egg.
I'd like some porridge in the morning and a little milk.
After all the others had ordered their breakfasts without so much as a please, they all got up. The hobbit had to find room for them all, and filled all his spare rooms and made beds on chairs and sofas before he got them all stowed and went to his own little bed, very tired and not altogether happy. As he lay in bed, he could hear Thorin still humming to himself in the best bedroom next to him.
Far over the misty mountains old, to dungeons deep and caverns old, we must away ere break of day to find our long forgotten gold.
Bilbo went to sleep with that in his ears, and it gave him very uncomfortable dreams.